Hey, what's up? Hello, future casters. I kind of lied to you a couple episodes ago. 22 did not end up being the finale. I didn't know I was lying to you at the time. That's just kind of how eclipse season goes. So, turns out I had some more episodes that I was excited to record and post. But I do need to take a little bit of a break on the interview formats for a little bit. I think still going to stick to the same plan of taking a break to get everything uploaded onto YouTube, maybe promote some more clips on the Instagram. We will be doing some more monthly forecasts. If you liked the October month ahead astrology forecast, there's going to be one for November. Fingers crossed if everything goes according to plan. But I wanted to give you a couple updates before we get into the belly of this episode today. So, please make sure that you are following me on Instagram at Persephonic777. That's PersePhonic, then 3 7s, for up-to-date information on events, workshops, readings, and other fun metaphysical happenings in Tucson and beyond. That's the best and easiest place for me to update folks. So while I'm on a little bit of a break, that's a good spot to still keep up with what's going on because fall is just starting and we know that things are only going to get more exciting in the spooky world. Another update, virtual tarot and astrology readings are available on my website, persephonictarot.com. But if you prefer your readings in person, I will be offering mini readings on a first-come, first-served basis at Aquamarine Daydream on 4th Avenue in Tucson. And I'm so excited to say I'm now able to offer full-length deep dive readings at Spa Days located at Oracle and Ina. This is also where I practice therapeutic massage, craniosacral therapy, and more. So if you are looking for an intuitive body and energy worker that can also let you know what's up with the cosmos, visit spadaystucson.com or give them a call and ask to book with me, Maria Elena. Later on in the episode, you're going to hear me promo this one more time, but don't forget that you are invited to my 30th birthday party at Crooked Tooth Brewing in downtown Tucson. We're going to have episode 18 guest Sophie McTeer doing flash tattoos. Episode 1 guest Chris Carlone is going to be offering rune readings. There's going to be karaoke, cake, beer brewed by the witchiest brewers in the Southwest, and all of this is benefiting two amazing mutual aid organizations in Tucson who will be there taking donations and answering your questions about how to get involved. October 18th, Crooked Tooth, 5 to 10 p.m. I will see you there. Now, on to the interview. All right, hello and welcome. I am here with Jeff Hinshaw of Cosmic Cousins, one of a podcast about astrology, tarot, the metaphysical, all this good stuff that has made a huge impact on me and my practice. Jeff, I actually believe you were one of the first people to draw the connection for me between astrology and tarot and the associations between zodiac signs and specific cards in
That's
the major
cool.
arcana, which has become very foundational in my practice.
Well,
So thank you so much for joining me today, Jeff. How's it
thanks for
going?
having me. Yeah, I mean, these are two practices that go hand in hand for me. So I'm always, if I'm talking about tarot, I'm going to bring in the astrology, which is why I think it's cool that you brought out the fifth spirit tarot today, because if you look closely at the details, you'll see little astroglyphs incorporated in there.
Yes, the Fifth Spirit Tarot is one of my favorite decks. Charlie Clare Burgess did an incredible job. And yeah, all the little hidden glyphs, super fun.
Yeah.
So, Jeff, you had just announced that you are the author for an upcoming tarot deck called the Lonely Planet Travel Tarot.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
That's so
Thank you so
exciting.
much.
So, what was the creation of this deck like? How did that come about?
Yeah, well, I was connected to Lonely Planet. They had the idea to create a tarot deck and reached out to me. I think as someone who, I'm an Aquarius and I have both of my ruling planets in Sagittarius, so I have done a great deal of travel in my own life having those Sag placements. So I think just by me really, living in alignment with what felt true to me, even though a lot of the decisions I've made in my life haven't been maybe the most practical from like a traditional perspective, I've followed my heart. I'm very like fool-like, very heart-led. And so tarot is something that I've always deeply loved. So I've studied it for years. And travel is also something that I love. Although I don't necessarily travel for like vacation, it's normally somehow aligned with something going on in my life when it comes to my studies. So I'll be guided to certain locations to deepen my understanding of a practice. And I think through my love of exploring self-discovery and also tarot, that has led me to this opportunity to get to collaborate with a travel company. And hopefully the intention is to bring a bit more intention or mindfulness or ritual into people's connection to the planet. So it's not just about travel. It's really about self-discovery. And even for some people, this will start to lend into ancestral healing work, depending on where in the world they're from or their ancestors are from. So it really will be informed by one's own birth chart, I think, how they might use a travel tarot deck. So yeah, that's how it came about. It was their idea. They reached out to me and it seemed like a good fit. I like that Lonely Planet is very environmentally conscious and also supports a lot of social causes that align with my values too. So yeah, it's an expansive moment for me in my offerings, because I'm teamed up with a company that is going to be publishing this around the world. So that's exciting for me at this moment. I'm celebrating that.
The Brooklyn Fool gets to go worldwide.
Yeah.
You seems like you've kind of built the archetype of the fool into your business, your brand, the work that you do. Have you always been connected to that card?
I think so, yeah. I mean, the first card I ever pulled, I was probably like 14 years old, and I had picked up a Thoth tarot deck, Aleister Crowley's deck, from this board game shop in downtown Richmond, Virginia, where I was born. And the first card I ever pulled was the Sun card. And the Sun card in that deck is actually quite joyful. It has like, I think like a little cherub angel, you know, underneath the very radiant sunshine. So I think of that card, but also the Fool in that deck has this umbilical cord of life that's like wrapped around the Fool three times and is connecting to the cosmos. So that depiction of the Fool certainly speaks to me as someone who has Uranus. You know, the Fool is connected to Uranus, conjunct the galactic center in my chart of Uranus at the same degree as the galactic center. So that image is coming to mind right now. I do feel like I'm foolish in that way, that I can be a channel for the cosmos. I think we all have that ability, but it is certainly a signature to my work. And I even think Cosmic Cousins lends itself to that too.
Yeah, absolutely. The Sun card, before you hopped on the call here, I just shuffled real quick and pulled a card, and that was what I pulled before our conversation. And then the Sun in the Fifth Spirit Tarot, as you know, is such a beautiful depiction of the author and creator, Charlie Clare Burgess, and their partner enjoying a lovely little picnic.
Yes. And actually, interestingly, the Fool in the Travel Tarot deck that's the one card that's meant to be me. So awesome.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah. In the same way, I love how Charlie created himself as a figure on the Sun card, and also how that card has evolved from the different printings that they've done on it as they are continuing to go through transition and transformation, as we all do. And yeah, the Fool and the Travel Tarot is connected to, could I share with you a location? So each of the 78 cards are
yes,
please, in the world. So, the Fool is connected to the Gower Peninsula, which is in Wales, because it's where I studied abroad in like 2009. And it was before I knew anything really about tarot. I already had a tarot deck, but I hadn't really studied it. So that felt very Fool to me. It's also before I really knew anything about the world. It was the first time I left the United States and went to another place in the world. And it also is a place that is, you know, deeply connected to the nature that you might see in the Rider-Waite-Smith, where typically the Fool's on the edge of an epic cliff, and that's very much the Gower Peninsula there, is these epic cliffs alongside the Atlantic Ocean. So you're kind of like on the edge of the world. But what I'm always interested in, particularly as an Aquarius when working with the tarot, is how the tarot has evolved over time to act as a mirror to collective consciousness at a particular moment. So I have been really sitting with, in the creation of this deck, what does it mean for me as a deck creator to be working with the archetypes in 2025, and this is going to be published in 2026 when we're in, Pluto's in Aquarius right now, so we're in the midst of just massive collective awakening around power dynamics and collective trauma. And so what does it mean to be creating a deck that celebrates the world when we're in the face of genocide and ecocide and climate collapse and all of these different themes? So the Fool in this deck actually takes a much more serious tone. It's not the Fool, you know, joyfully leaping off the side of the cliff. It's the Fool with their hands in their pocket, like very aware of the intersection of their privilege and their power, and kind of grappling with these questions of what does it mean for me to be so aware of humanity. It's Uranus's card after all. So yeah, some of the archetypes do feel similar to previous archetypes, and others of them take shape in new ways that I think speak to the times that we're living in. And that's really what tarot originated in, as a way for us to communicate through symbols and archetypes that speak to us at this moment.
Absolutely. What does it mean when the jester is in a court committing atrocities? What does it mean for that person and that role and that archetype? What responsibilities do they take on? What new questions do they have to face? That's a brilliant point. I do always love to draw that connection of, you know, every single deck that is created is being created through the context, the biases, the viewpoint of the person and people behind it and the historical context that's being made in. So I'm very excited to see what you have come up with, what you've written, what's to come with this. And I'm curious a little bit about the process, because there's a brilliant illustrator and artist who did the artwork for this deck. And so did you get to see the images and then write based on the imagery? Did you have input on some of the imagery? How did that collaboration come about?
I'm actually going to use this as a teaching opportunity for us, because I think it's really cool to have worked on a project that took a year to create. And I think it's kind of the first time that I've ever spent an entire year on a creative process. And because of that, it has allowed me to deepen my connection to Mercury as the planet of writing and communication, which is really important when collaborating with other people. And so there's a whole team of people behind this project, including, you know, the marketing team, the editor, the side of the team that's the artist. So it's not just one artist. It's called Studio Muti is the name of the studio, and they're based in Cape Town, South Africa.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, so it's about a team of four people that have worked with Lonely Planet in the past, and their style of art is most akin to something like when you would see like a vintage national park photo. So that's the kind of style. So it's actually a very zen kind of meditative deck, which is cool. It's focused more on place and nature than it is on people. And so the process, the teaching opportunity that I have for us, which I think is cool because I'm still kind of unpacking it, is that within a given year, Mercury will station retrograde 3 times. And in the second half of 2024 and the first half of 2025, we were gifted Mercury retrograde in fire signs. And so that's how Mercury works. So I'm even thinking of the symbol of a triangle being that it retrogrades 3 times in a given year. And so we can use the Mercury retrograde time periods as these were like hot spots, thinking of the fire element of the project. And so the first Mercury retrograde was in Sagittarius during Sagittarius season. And already as a travel tarot deck, Sagittarius is connected to the world at large. And so during that time period that Mercury was in Sagittarius, this is when we were really connecting to place, like where in the world is this card going to be? And so this was up to me in my own study of the iconography of the tarot, my own conversations that I'm having with other people about places that they've traveled in the world. So it was a lot of interviewing, like actually like on the ground researching through interviewing people, but then my own research, looking at other Lonely Planet guidebooks and reading about places. And then intuitively choosing what location in the world most deeply speaks to that, while keeping in mind that I want it to be a very diverse project. So there needs to be locations from all continents present in the deck. So that was Mercury retrograde in Sagittarius. Then Mercury retrograde in Aries was more like I received the rough draft back and it was just like bleeding in red ink. There's like so many things that we were re-envisioning, and I had to really stand up for my vision a lot of times in that process of like, no, like the High Priestess is like definitely this location, or, you know, like whatever came up. And then Mercury retrograde in Leo, which would have been in Leo season, was that's when the art came in. So actually the art came in final. It was a lot of the conceptualization of the places and what I was writing about it before we even got to the art. And so then that whole process was, that was the most joyful, which is very Leo in the process, because then you start to see things come to life. We started talking about marketing, what the cover would look like, how we want it to be seen in the world. And that was a lot of kind of back and forth of like, actually originally The Fool, I was like, The Fool looks so somber. I was like, I don't know how I feel about that. And then I sat with it and I was like, actually, this makes a lot of sense. So sometimes I was always kind of in awe of the artist, because I would communicate the vision of the card, and sometimes they'd come back with it. I feel like they were channeling different images that I was like, actually, that like, that's spot on, actually, well done. So it was an act of surrender and collaboration, of trusting in the intuitive process of its unfolding. But yeah, I was playing like the Arthur Waite in this instance to Studio Mutibi and the Pamela Coleman Smith. And so it was a creative collaboration. But yeah, now we're going to shift into Mercury retrograde and water signs starting this Scorpio season. So we're on to a new grand water trine in the second half of 2025 and into 2026. But yeah, that's like the bigger picture that I can use Mercury as like a way to organize it.
I love that. And there's a number of things that you've said just in the quick 15 minutes that we've been chatting here that have evoked the cards that I've already turned over here for your present. So talking about these Mercury retrogrades, this trine, this grouping of three retrogrades within a year, Mercury being a planet so connected to air, we're talking about communication, writing, collaborating, and surrendering to the collaboration process. And so the first card that's come up here, it is reversed, is the Three of Swords. Uh-huh. We have the Three of Swords here.
And what position is it showing up for?
It is showing up reverse, and this is for the present. So talking about, you know, everything we've discussed here of like the current process that you're in. So seeing a lot of that collaboration within and yeah, just that interesting pull to Mercury. And I'm sure there's kind of healing and collaborative healing aspect of the Three of Swords.
This is Zagreb, Croatia.
Oh, Croatia.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And what's the connection to, I love the concept of place as card. Yeah. Like I have a lot of decks that are like plant as card, or item or image as card, but place as card as archetype is a really unique one, I think.
Yeah. I was interviewing someone asking them, what's one of the most unique places in the world that you've ever been to? Trust the first place that comes into mind. And in Croatia, they said the Museum of Broken Relationships. And so I had just marked it as the Three of Swords. But then at the time that I signed the contract with Lonely Planet, I was house sitting for a friend who's a Cancer who was in Croatia. And so I told her to go there, and then she was going through a break, like the end of a breakup too at that time. And so there were just all these kind of messages around that. And then I started going deeper into Zagreb, Croatia, and its nickname is the City of a Million Hearts. And when you're there, you can find biscuits that are in the shapes of hearts. There's benches in the shapes of hearts. There's like a bridge that you can walk that has all these lockets in the shapes of hearts. So it just kept coming up, but it's also kind of a rainy city half the year too. Mm-hmm. And that card normally has rain on it, and it's kind of like more medieval in its like architecture. And so I was like, ooh, this is giving like sword energy, Three of Swords for sure. So yeah, that's the location for that card. So I might bring in some of them as you pull them, but
please. That's fascinating. And just building the hype, I'm sure folks, I'm already very excited to have this deck in my hands. Yeah. I love a new deck coming into the tradition. And speaking of tradition, I think anytime someone creates a tarot deck, I had this conversation with Frank Lawrence, who is currently working on bringing the Vibrating Tarot to life. That was a previous episode. And talking a lot about how each new deck that is created adds to the tradition of tarot, which goes back hundreds of years. And there's something about lineage. There's something about wisdom traditions and passing information down and having that information also shift and evolve, which you touched on talking about having, it was Aquarian placements. You have a lot of Aquarius, right?
Yeah.
So being part of this, and a Virgo moon, yeah. Beautiful. So being part of this tradition, but also flipping it on its head a little bit, having to come to it from the perspective of someone who is quite Aquarian, Pluto and Aquarius, bringing new evolutions, new things, new bits of knowledge to this grand tradition. And so the other card that we have coming up here for the present is, of course, the Hierophant, also in a reversed position.
Hey, that's my life path card.
Oh, I was going to ask, what is your life path card? Yeah. The Hierophant. That makes a lot of sense for what I know of what you've put out in the world so far.
Yes. Yes. I don't really work with reversals. Did you know? Tell me about how you work with them.
Very loosely. Yeah. Very loosely. Well, I work with reversals almost on a case-by-case basis, very intuitively. Sometimes I will go into entire phases where I will never consider a reversal. And sometimes I'll get some come up and I'll go, I'll think about this. So for me, the reversed Hierophant here, it gives the same information as I would have gathered with it upright, but it is flagging that Aquarian nature. Nice. That sense of this is the Hierophant is so traditional and so much about knowledge passing down and following a lineage, but that reversal gives a little bit more of an emphasis on the innovative aspect of innovating tradition.
Which this is the whole contradiction of Aquarian the contrarian, is its two ruling planets are Saturn tradition and Uranus dismantling tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And I have them, I'm part of the generation in the late 80s that has those planets conjunct. So they're just within a few degrees in Sagittarius, the sign of world travel in the 11th house of, you know, community. So yeah, that makes sense. So the reversal speaks to maybe that Uranus is involved with Saturn in my chart. Yeah, that's my life path card. I like seeing that. It's showing up for the present with the Three of Swords. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
And then I have Chiron and Gemini opposite that conjunction. So the Three of Swords would make me think of Chiron and Gemini. Yeah.
Yeah. When I talk about the Three of Swords, the imagery that Charlie Clare Burgess put out with the anatomical heart with the holes in it, and there's sewing needles that are threaded. That really drew the connection to me of, I always give the metaphor of the Three of Swords speaking to the experience of needing to receive stitches and how when you go through that process, you have to first clean out the wound and that like cleaning out phase, which feels very chironic to me. The healer has to go in and kind of do a little dirty work. It might be painful, it might be uncomfortable, but that allows for much more deeper healing and healing that's going to stick and last a little better.
Yeah. So along those lines of wisdom tradition, I could share a little bit about my background and, you know, where I'm coming from. I had the incredible opportunity to study with Rachel Pollack when I lived in New York City, who has been such an informative part of my practice, is getting the chance to study with them. And
may they rest in peace.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, as a trans artist, their work has always really spoken to me, particularly through the lineage and with great reverence of Pamela Coleman Smith. And so much of their channel images for the Rider-Waite-Smith have informed my practice. And that was really what I studied. So, you know, I honor Pixie as my fellow Aquarius. And she had a Leo moon and Rachel Pollack was a Leo. So there's something along this Aquarius Leo axis that really speaks to me, because even like Charlie Clare Burgess, I'm really informed in a modern context from their work as an Aquarius too. So yeah, as far as tarot, that's really where my main studies. And then I led for 5 years in Brooklyn, the Brooklyn Fool's Tarot Journey. So a lot of my studies have also come through community gatherings of ritual immersion, where we'd gather for 6 months, one week for each of the major arcana cards. So a lot of listening to other people in circles about, like, if it's the Fool's Gathering, each person gets to say a thing about the Fool. And so it's been a lot of dismantling hierarchy through coming together in community and sharing through lived experience and just having conversations. Like, each person I meet is a teacher. And I know from you and your lived experience that you would teach me about every single card in the tarot because you have your own unique lived experience. And so just a lot of listening and conversation. And that's why where podcasting comes into play for me, because I'm just endlessly curious about how we are all here to co-create in these archetypes. So that would be the Uranian side. But then the Saturnian side is I do have certain authors and teachers and artists that have like really speak to me. So I would be carrying on their work and legacy through my work. And I acknowledge both of them in the Travel Tarot Guidebook, you know, in the like acknowledgement section. And then as far as astrology, I had the opportunity to study with Ann Ortley when I lived in New York City. And she was the first astrology podcast that I ever listened to. She's also an Aquarius rising. So there's like this Aquarian thing for me, probably with a lot of my teachers. And yeah. So those are my teachers in those paths. But I also studied yoga, studied psychology, creative writing. Like, I'm just like endlessly studying, and all those things get woven together into my practices.
The Hierophant is the eternal student and teacher as well, of course. And you mentioned that you pulled your first card when you were about 14. That seems to be an age that many of us who really continue on with the tradition access tarot. I know myself and a few of my close friends who are also kind of professionals in the space, like 14 is the age that we hit
Saturn opposition. Tarot.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Saturn. Exactly. So how did that deck come into your hands? You mentioned it was the Thoth Tarot. I love my, it's usually Aquarian little oddballs that start with Thoth. It's such a particular deck.
Interesting. Yeah, I was just drawn to it at the shop, and I kind of had to keep it hidden from my family, you know, like, which I think is like how maybe this will segue us into the past, right? We were talking about the present, and I guess the past is connecting to teachers too, but
Oh, yeah, we're already there. We're firmly there.
Oh, yeah. What cards did we get for the past?
So we got two cards that are quite similar in my mind, somewhat, both very much associated with air signs. We have Welcome to Libra Season, Justice.
Oh, hey, girl.
Beautiful Justice coming up, which I hear in you talking about, like, dismantling systems of oppression and honoring our teachers and making sure that we're, like, naming them, especially the fact that so much of tarot history comes from queer folks and very specifically trans folks. I very much see that with the Justice card coming up, making sure that those voices are in the forefront. And then the Knight of Swords, another nice sword here.
Which I also associate with Libra because I think a Knight's is cardinal.
Interesting. Yeah. Oh, interesting. Okay, Knight's is cardinal. That makes a lot of sense. I will bookmark that in my brain. The first deck that I ever received was the Mythic Tarot. And in that deck, the Knight of Swords is associated with Gemini, and it has twins riding the horse.
I've seen that.
So I've always made a bit of a, so I made a Gemini association there, but I like Knights as cardinal. That makes, a very cardinal person, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, and I think of Kings as fixed, and then mutable could be Page or Queen. Like, I like mutability. Which then gives Gemini two cards, which feels, you know, appropriate. But yeah, so this is showing up for the past. It's interesting. I mean, that brings up for me, I'm part of, you know, the year where we had the South Node of Fate in Libra, and South Node's often said to be the past and where you're coming from. So those to me are both quite very Libran cards. And yeah, we're recording here in Libra season. Yeah, that's making me think of, you know, as a kid, I was always justice oriented. Like, even in elementary school, like, I was part of the Friendly Helpers is what it was called, which is like basically standing up against bullies and like being there for new students and giving them a tour. And, you know, I've always been the kid that's wanted to be of service in some sort of way. And I always had like a really busy mind and like to categorize things. So I used like the moment that I look back to and I was like, oh, I was always meant to be an astrologer, is I was part of this like hidden talent show that a substitute teacher did. And she didn't know what to do with us for the last 30 minutes of class. So she had us all come up and like do some, like a talent. And mine was that I could share everyone's birthday in alphabetical order, like in the whole grade, like all 120 people. And everyone was just like, what the fuck? Like, that was so random and also amazing. But I've always just like kind of studied people's birthdays and kind of wanted to, at that time I was maybe more fascinated by like the personality side and how it lined up with what the birthday book said. And I would like take notes in the birthday book and write people's names in there. And I think that evolved over time. Like, I've just always been interested in, you know, justice and standing up for people and making people feel welcome and also organizing people's personalities by, you know, the time of year that they were born. I think I was in need of some sort of system that helped me make use of those gifts and skill sets. And it just so happens that astrology is a structure for that. I think the tarot side of it is probably, you know, the darker side of the past, which is all of us likely in our family of origin have trauma and secrets and just like ancestral patterns. And so I think for me, I'm the only person in my family that's part of the Pluto and Scorpio generation. I'm the youngest in the family. So I always kind of took on that like psychological role of being like, what's going on here, you know? And so I think tarot definitely helped me in a lot of deeper healing. It helped me kind of, you know, loosen the wires of ancestral trauma so that I could break free from, you know, the family of origin and transform. And so tarot has been more about self-empowerment in many ways. But I think both practices, they're very different, but they also go hand in hand with each other. Yeah.
They are very different. I think they serve very separate purposes, but they can also be intertwined so beautifully. So we have almost exclusively air-related cards coming up, save for the Hierophant. We have Justice, the Knight of Swords. I see both of those being so much associated with air, of course, and then moving into that Three of Swords. So there is like this evolution into the community container. So where the Knight of Swords could sometimes be seen as somewhat isolated, I guess, like you're moving very quickly, maybe difficult to come into communion or community with that fast pace. Moving that into the Three of Swords in the present speaks to how that has shifted in your life. And now community is such a big focus in your work and bringing people together. I'm going to be giggling for a little while about your ability to name everyone's birthday in order.
Probably could still do it. Probably still remember everyone's birthday from elementary school.
Like, there were signs that you would be an astrologer. Oh my gosh. I used to bring my tarot deck to middle school with me, and I would try to read for kids at our lunch break with like my big book that I'd bring because I was still looking at the guidebook, my tarot deck. There were signs. Yeah. There were signs along the way.
For sure.
Awesome. So let's look to the future.
Ooh, my favorite.
I know, taking a look forward, the Aquarian future, the Age of Aquarius. So this deck is coming out in 2026. You were able to announce it here in fall of 2025. Did you pick a particular date? Did you elect the date to announce the deck, or was that just like kind of given to you?
No, they didn't give me the option to do that. And so I just was like, you know, there's a lot of things in working with a bigger company that are out of your hands. And so I was just like, you know, you don't really pick your child's birthday. Like, you just kind of leave it up to the universe unless it's like a scheduled C-section or something like that. But, you know, when they gave me the date, I was like, oh, wow, this is a great chart. It's an Aquarius, which I love. You know, it feels very appropriate. Like, well, originally they wanted it to come out in Sagittarius season of this year so that it would be ready for like holiday gifting. But it just, it wasn't quite ready yet because we wanted to perfect it and make it the best that we could. And so I love that it's going to be coming out during Aquarius season. And it's also coming out just a few days before the Saturn-Neptune conjunction in Aries. So it comes out on the 17th of February, and that conjunction's on the 20th. And so they're both at zero degrees at a world point, which is great for a travel tarot deck. So when I looked at the birth chart, I was like, yeah, this is spot on. This is great. So I think if I had looked at the chart, if they were like, oh, we want it to come out like in Aries season, I might have like been like, just so you know, like, this isn't aligned with a travel tarot deck, you know, something like that. But I didn't need to. I looked at the chart and I was like, great, let's do it.
That's often how it works. I feel like, especially with current events that have happened around this eclipse season, these Virgo Pisces eclipse, I hear a lot of folks talking about like, oh, they must have had an astrologer. They must have had an astrologer to pick these dates for these things. And a lot of times I'm like, Sometimes, yeah. And a lot of times it's simply the world clock ticking and keeping track of what's happening. The astrology happens regardless of whether we check in on it or plan it or not.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel that way. Like, as an astrologer myself, I don't necessarily like do a lot of timing techniques. I just meditate and listen to my body and just trust in the flow. And usually, like, that allows me to be, I am thinking about the Virgo Pisces polarity, because Virgo might want to like micromanage the universe, and Pisces is like, no, like, just let go and let it flow. And I, you know, Moon in Virgo, ruled by Mercury and Pisces in my chart. So I am in that polarity a lot. But yeah. So yeah. The great conjunction.
How did that eclipse season go for you?
Oh, it's been great. Yeah.
I've
been enjoying the upgrades around Virgo and Pisces in my chart. Yeah, that's how I meditate on it and work with it. And I've seen both my Virgo and Pisces placements really evolve during this year. I think this travel tarot deck is deeply connected to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
How about you?
Amazing. Oh, this eclipse season was really interesting for me. I don't have strong Pisces or Virgo placements. It's in my 12th and 6th house axis. I do have Saturn in Pisces, but that's it.
Are you a Libra rising?
I am an Aries rising.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm an Aries rising, Aries moon, Libra sun.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Born on an Aries full moon eclipse with a... quite a bit. I've got a lot going on in the Capricorn, Aries, Libra T-square situation.
And do you work with, it's just like, as I was preparing for you, I was like, oh, I wonder, I forgot where Persephone was in my chart. Like, is that, do you work with Persephone or, yeah.
I don't really work with any asteroids. I'm very much, where I'm at with my astrology right now is I'm sinking very heavily into the Hellenistic traditional astrology viewpoint. Mm-hmm. My teacher currently is Austin Coppock, and that's kind of my realm. But you mentioned the first card you ever pulled being the sun. So for me, when I first got my tarot deck, which is, like I said, the Mythic Tarot, the card that I immediately was enamored by was the High Priestess. And the High Priestess in the Mythic Tarot is depicted as Persephone descending the steps into the underworld. And so that was my reading the book, looking into that card was how I discovered Persephone. And then all the little things, I'm very much a person of great duality. So the goddess of spring, the queen of the underworld, that's always really spoken to me. I spent a number of years in the adult entertainment industry. So I spent a lot of time down in the underworld. I worked in strip clubs for many years, and I met Persephone, I met Hades, I met them all down in there and learned a lot along the way.
Well, I know you're coming from a Hellenistic perspective, but I would still be fascinated to learn where Ceres, Persephone's mother, is in your chart and Persephone. Yeah.
I'll have to look into that. I know that a lot of I have a major Libra stellium, and then when I add in a lot of the asteroids, they're also still in Libra. So that would be my guess be that Ceres is in Libra.
Nice.
But I'll have to check on that.
That's a big part of my focus with astrology is working with the asteroids. And I come more from an esoteric perspective, the esoteric lineage, through particularly Heidi Rose Robbins is another one of my astrology teachers that I should mention. And her she's a second generation astrologer. Her father, Michael Robbins, was like a thought leader in the esoteric astrology world. But yeah, asteroids are a big part of my work, and they're actually going to be in the travel tarot too. Each of the queens are associated with the four main asteroids.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
So when this deck comes out, what are your biggest hopes and dreams for Travel Tarot once it arrives into the hands of those who are going to be working with it? Because once this kind of project gets released into the world, I feel like it really takes on its own life.
Yeah. Yeah. Do we get cards for this one to inspire?
Mm-hmm. Oh, to inspire, you say?
Yes.
To inspire? Well, we have the Queen of Wands and the Four of Wands, if we want to talk about inspiration here.
So interesting, though, how the past, I was like, oh, I have South Node in Libra, and that was very Libra, and then this is very North Node in Aries in many ways.
North Node in Aries. Yeah. Yes, we have opposite nodal placements.
Nice. Yeah, when you said you were born during eclipse, knowing you're on the Libra-Aries axis, I was like, we're either the same age or you're about... 12 years
apart, or 9 years.
So yeah, I like seeing this fiery Queen of Wands showing up. I mean, in some ways that makes me think of, this is new for me, like just I'm kind of in the process of like doing like meeting with the marketing teams now, and the Queen of Wands in that particular deck in the fifth spirit, which actually this is the first version of the fifth spirit, because the Queen of Wands was changed in the newer version.
Yes, this is the Kickstarter version. So I always refer to this particular image of the Queen of Wands I see as Samantha from Sex and the City.
Nice. Yeah, I love that Queen of Wands. So I love that in the new deck, it was transformed into what I think is probably a drag queen. And it says like the Nine Lives Club and the neon sign in the back. But I love the Queen of Wands from the Kickstarter version so much. It's inspired so many really good conversations. And I do think of it as kind of like, it kind of thinks like an editorial photo shoot or something. So it is make, when I see that, it does make me think about how I'm going to be stepping into maybe a more visible role in the future with this deck. But I would also like that to encourage other people too, to step into their power. And you know, wands are deeply connected to things like travel too. So and we were saying the North Node in Aries for me, and this connecting me to Aries. And I was talking about the Saturn Neptune conjunction in Aries right as it's coming out. And so it is a collective threshold moment that I'm just deeply fascinated by, because we know how informative the Saturn Pluto conjunction was that took place in January of 2020. And it's really a learning opportunity as astrologers, because this is the first time that we're experiencing a Saturn-Neptune conjunction as working astrologers. So I'm not necessarily like predicting anything in the future, but just meditating on this conjunction in Aries, which again is right at a world point, which is 0 degrees of Aries. So we are in the midst of a collective threshold moment. And I want this deck to help us envision new possibilities for the future while also honoring and acknowledging the past. And so the ways that I've seen this deck showing up for people already, because I've had the opportunity to use the archetypes, I don't have the deck in my hand yet, but for instance, even the client that I gave a reading right before our call was talking about how they're wanting to relocate to a different place in the world. And it just so happens that that place in the world is connected to one of the tarot cards that then deeply connects to their own birth chart, because each of the 78 cards will have an astrological correspondence to it. The major arcana is based off of the traditional system, whereas the minor arcana, I created a new system. So there's that kind of like Saturnian, Uranian influence again. And so it's come up in conversations that are helping people re-envision where home is, or which I'm thinking of the Four of Wands, is perhaps maybe more home-like in this deck. We see the warm fireplace.
Absolutely. The hearth.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's one way that I envision it. And another way I would think is this is maybe my favorite way to use this tarot deck for future possibility, which is not actually having a tarot spread, but we would start to talk about what your ancestral heritage is and then pulling out the cards that are associated with those locations in the world. And so they become kind of like new, like soul cards for you that you can work with. And I have seen such tremendous healing. I did it with, this is very Sagittarian, but I was on a plane flying from California to New York where I was about to lead a Jupiter entering Cancer ritual in Brooklyn at the place that I used to teach at, Maha Rose. And the person sitting next to me on the plane is from New York, but lives in LA now. And they, at some point, were just like, hey, I'm sorry, but I've been looking at your computer screen and I saw that you're writing about the tarot and I love the tarot. Can we talk about this? So I told them about this project that it's a travel tarot deck, and essentially on their mom's side, they're like, their mother is Guatemalan and Japanese. And then on their father's side is like Italian and Spanish. And so we pulled out
what
the card.
What a beautiful blend.
Yeah, we pulled out the card. There's a card for each of those four locations. So we talked about them, and it ended with both of us crying and just like, we processed so much and confirmed so much for him at that moment in time. And so the ancestral spread and soul cards, I think that's actually not going to be in the guidebook because that came like after the conceptualization of everything, but that's how I'm intuitively starting to work with this deck.
Wow, I love that. This concept of using this tool for personal power, which is something you said earlier about how you like to use tarot to help create personal power and also helping. It's like that personal power and coming home to the ancestry and the lineage. And that's absolutely what's reflected in the Queen of Wands and the Four of Wands here. How beautiful.
Yeah.
Is there a card location that's in like the American Southwest, Northern Mexico region?
Yes. There's maybe a few since I'm kind of in that part of the world. A little biased there. Yeah, the Death card. Originally, I had as New Mexico, but we ended up shifting it to Death Valley. Pretty like on the nose.
We were like, oh, come on.
Yeah. So, and then Las Vegas is the Devil card.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And then Joshua Tree is where I wrote it, and that's connected to the Eight of Wands.
Beautiful.
So yeah, there's cards in the general area. So I would say all three of those cards would be connected to Arizona for sure. Just even energetically. Yeah.
I'm going to remember that connection to death in New Mexico because a lot of my family before they came to Arizona, they started in New Mexico and Northern Mexico and then kind of made our way over here. And the death card feels very fitting. One of my personal favorites.
Yeah, I think it was originally inspired for me by who was named Queen of Scorpio by the Cosmic Cousins listeners in 2018, Georgia O'Keefe, who lived in New Mexico. And I got the opportunity to stay at the Ghost Ranch. And I got snowed in there on New Year's Eve of 2019 and took my tarot deck, the Rider-Waite-Smith, on a little walk and sat under a snowy tree and was, you know, tuning in. I was like, what is my deeper message here? And I pulled the death card, you know, and it's just like one of those moments where you're like, this is Scorpio's card. Like, did I even need to bring my deck with me to know this? But like, it just like reaffirmed that. So I always associate death card with New Mexico. But for some reason, in the editing process, like it didn't always land exactly in the location that I wanted, but it would sometimes, there would be like a like cosmic cookie crumb trail that led to a certain location. Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. Wow. New Year's 2019. That was a time that we didn't know what it was yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm just so thrilled to know that this is coming out. And I want to, you mentioned the Zodiac Queens community project that occurred. So for folks who aren't familiar with Cosmic Cousins, aren't familiar with Jeff's work, wow, look into the Cosmic Queens and look into Zodiac emojis. Yeah. Because those were some of my most favorite. I was so excited for Zodiac emojis every week.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, so bringing together community to kind of vote and help identify what emojis and what like powerful feminine figures for the Zodiac Queens were associated with each Zodiac sign. And that was really illuminating, really enlightening. Again, I so see the Hierophant as your soul card and just continuing to bring to the tradition, being a perpetual student and teacher.
It's yours.
Oh, mine is the Lovers.
Amazing.
Yeah. Mine is Lovers.
Come on, Libra. Yeah. I know that's Gemini's card, but it's very Libran.
It's very Libran, and then having Justice as Libra, like Justice, the Emperor, the Lovers all show up heavy in my life. Anytime the Lovers comes up in a reading that I'm doing for myself, I know I have to pay attention. But I'm at Life Path 33, so six.
Cool.
Six is my number.
Well, I live on Latitude 33, so I'm thinking about that number a lot.
Well, any final thoughts about your journey, your deck? I'm just so grateful that we got to have this conversation, and loving all the cards that came up today.
Well, when is this episode coming out? You know?
That's a good question. Oh, okay. That's a really good question, because the episode I put out yesterday was supposed to be the season finale. And then I said, oh, we're actually going to drop two more episodes. So I believe... I think what's going to happen is, spoiler alert for the past, because listeners, this will already have happened, putting out my first astrology forecast next week. And then I think this episode is going to come out on my birthday on October 8th.
Great. Right around the Aries full moon. We were talking about this access a lot in
right
that conversation.
Right after the Aries full moon. Yeah. Yes. So that was on the 6th of October.
And Queen of Libra's bell hooks, so that could be someone for us to be connecting with, since this is coming out in Libra season, and she was a Lover's life path, actually.
And I was just listening to I'm listening to the astrology podcast that they just put out episodes, doing a deep dive on the fifth house, and they were talking about bell hooks having strong fifth house placements.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
It's all coming together.
Yeah. Well, very good. Yeah, so grateful for this opportunity to connect with you in this way, and I hope you have a wonderful solar return.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. This full moon on the 6th is somewhat of a close recurrence to my natal chart, because I'm in my Mars return. It's a big one. It's actually my 30th birthday, so
nice.
Seventh house perfection year. Got that full moon going on right before the birthday.
Yeah.
Big solar return. Speaking of justice, this will come out before my birthday party. So if you are in Tucson, Arizona, anyone who is listening, speaking of justice, my 30th birthday party on October 18th here in Tucson, Arizona at Crooked Tooth Brewing is a mutual aid fundraiser. So let's get those mutual aid dollars coming in.
Come on, Libra. I see you.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. I'm like, Aries needs to be the center of attention, but Libra has to be doing it for good. Yeah.
This Aries full moon, too, just from an asteroid perspective, since she came up in our conversation, Ceres, spelled C-E-R-E-S, who is Demeter, Persephone's mother, is conjunct this full moon. Ceres is currently in Aries. So if you are interested in the asteroids, this would be a full moon to drop into the invitations of Ceres, which is about honoring the wheel of the year. I think the asteroids offer us vocabulary for those who work with tarot or in the healing arts. And so Ceres is processing grief through their work and their service in the world. And Ceres is the largest asteroid. Some would even actually classify her as a planetoid. And she was the first asteroid to be discovered in 1801.
Wow. Okay. This full moon is going to be a good time for me to drop into some asteroid study, check out where they're showing up in my natal chart and transiting.
Yes.
How fun.
Yes. Good.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for having this conversation with me. I'm very excited about all of your future work to come. So thrilled to get this deck in my hands, because really the imagery, the art is gorgeous, what we've seen so far. And I know that your words will be just as beautiful to accompanying it. So I'm looking forward to learning and maybe getting to travel a little bit with this deck. Ooh. And thank you to everyone who joined us for this conversation today. I should say, definitely go check out Jeff Hinshaw at Cosmic Cousins on Instagram. And where else can folks find you?
It's Cosmic Cousins across the board. CosmicCousins.com or Cosmic period or Cosmic.Cousins on Instagram. But yeah, I kind of streamline it. That's the username. Awesome. Yeah.
Cosmic Cousins across the board, and check out the newest episodes of Cosmic Cousins as well. And as always, dear listeners, happy shuffling.